In just a moment, you'll be listening to a message that was given by Pastor Kyle Olsfelt of Grace Baptist Church in Pampa, Texas. We encourage you to give attention to the message and to follow along in your Bible.
Turn, if you would, tonight to Mark chapter 7. Mark chapter 7 is where we're going to be this evening. As you're finding your place there, I want to begin with a statement tonight that some of you might possibly disagree with. But even if you chose to disagree with this, I think I could make my case to some extent. And the statement is this, is that we tend to like uniformity or consistency in many areas of our lives. Now see, some people may say, oh no, I don't like that. I'm a free spirit. I just like to be spontaneous. I just like to go and do and live on a whim. I don't like consistency, but that's simply not true. There are many areas in our lives where we long for this sense of consistency, and we long and we expect this sense of maybe uniform action or uniform behavior. And if it's not there, it can affect our overall spirit and our overall demeanor. Let me explain to you what I mean to try to prove my point. If you've ever had a kid in school, here's what you know. You want the teachers to be consistent in how they treat the kids. You're not good with the teacher having a pet. You're not good with the teacher having a favorite child or couple of children. No, you want there to be consistency. You want there to be a uniformity in their actions. You don't want just kind of a free-spirited teacher randomly liking some but not others. I think most of us would agree to this, that we don't like moody people. We don't like moody people. We don't like the ones who are up one moment and down the next. One moment they're friendly and jovial and good-spirited, and the next time you see them, they're just down and low and discouraged and depressed. And you're thinking, what happened? What changed your spirit? Are you mad at me? Did I do something? And then you find out it's nothing. They're just moody slash obnoxious. It goes so far as to be represented or manifested in this fashion. A lot of employers like the idea of uniformity, consistency. So what do they provide for their employees? Uniforms, right? It goes along with that uniformity, that consistency. We want everything to look the same. We want it to look neat. We want it to look orderly. On and on the examples could go. You get the point. We tend to like consistency. We like for there to be a uniform approach to how things are handled, how things are done. So that in mind, we're going to be, as I've already said, in the book of Mark. And as we are there this evening, I want us to hear this. I want you to just kind of hear a confession of mine. I've made this in the past, but I'm going to make it again tonight. That in my Bible reading this week, I came to the book of Mark. And as you know, in the Gospels, you get the stories, one right after another, after another, after another, and they repeat themselves many times from Gospel to Gospel. So if you're like me, you have heard these stories much of your life, and whenever you've heard something many times, it's somewhat easy, is it not, to not engage the mind maybe like you should? And if the mind is not engaged, what is the mind doing? The mind is wandering. So you might be in Mark chapter 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever it is, and you're reading the words, but your mind is 1,000 miles away, and that's really not the best or most productive way in which to read the Scripture. But that's what was happening to me this week. I was reading through the Scripture. My mind was wandering. I've already read that story. I kind of know that one. I know most of the details about this one. Then we read this portion of Scripture, and I thought, my goodness, I've known that one, I've read that one, but it's never gotten my attention like it has this week. Now, if it's already gotten your attention in the same way, and this is just review for you, then that's fine. But I want us to think about the book of Mark from a general perspective first, and that is this, is that in the book of Mark, he spends no time on the birth of Christ. He spends no time introducing Christ. He spends no time setting the stage for the arrival of Christ. In the Gospel of Mark, here's what we've got, is we've got an immediate introduction to Christ and a storytelling or a revealing of the miracles and the ministry of Christ. That's how Mark delves in or jumps into his gospel, just hitting us with one story after another, after another, after another. So that being said, I want us to think about this, that as the gospel of Mark is beginning and the miracles are recorded, I want us to think about a consistent theme related to the miracles. All right, the theme that is related to all the miracles that we read, not only in Mark, but in all the Gospels, is this, is everyone was in need of something from Christ. Does that make sense? By way of these miracles that were performed, that we read about in the Gospels, every one of these people were in need of something from Christ that only Christ could do. There was a consistency in that need. Just to make my case or to illustrate what it is I'm saying, think about this, that Christ never cast out the demons of one who did not have demon possession. That need was not present. Christ never opened the blinded eyes of the one who had sight. Christ never restored the hearing of the one who had hearing. On and on the examples could go. Again, you get the point that everyone who received a miracle had this in common. They needed something from Christ that only Christ could give. And so keeping all that in mind, I just want to remind us of a couple of miracles that we read about in the first part of Mark's gospel, getting into the seventh chapter eventually. But it's in chapter 1 of Mark that we see Christ coming into contact with a man who had an evil spirit, an unclean spirit, or was demon-possessed. Okay, so Christ comes into contact in Mark chapter 1 with a man who is possessed with an unclean spirit or with a demon. And here is what it says in verse number 25, that Christ rebuked the unclean spirit. So Christ rebuked the unclean spirit, and then when Christ then rebuked this spirit, the spirit departed from the man. So what we find in chapter 1, verse number 25, relating to this miracle is this, is that Christ gave the verbal command, and it was done. You read just a few more verses there in chapter 1, and here's what you see, is that Christ came into contact with a man who was a leper. Now, I'm not going to spend time talking about all that went along with being a leper because we've dealt with that recently, but it's in verse number 41 that we read this, that Christ touched the man and the man was made clean, or he was healed from his leprous condition. So do you see the difference here? In one situation, Christ spoke, gave the verbal command, rebuked the evil spirit or the unclean spirit, and the man was set free, the devil was gone. And then in the next one, Christ touched the man and healed the one who was in need. So he's handled it in two different ways. As you continue reading in Mark's gospel, you find that the multitudes followed Christ wherever he went. And here is what they wanted to do. Some of them simply wanted to touch him because they knew it would result in a healing. Now, in a moment like that, you've got to understand this, that if the masses and the multitudes are around Christ and they're touching him and they're just trying to reach him in one fashion or another, they didn't even get specific attention from Christ. There was no interaction. There was no moment where he made eye contact with them and specifically met their need by way of a personal contact, but yet they still got what they needed from Christ or from God in that moment. And then, for whatever reason, you read specifically of the woman who had the issue of blood, who had been sick for many years, and it's in that moment that she touches the hem of the garment, and Christ wants to know who touched him because the virtue went from him. Why that story is different, we don't know, but obviously it's different. Then you've got the miracle of the feeding of the 5,000 and the miracle of the feeding of the 4,000 in Mark's gospel. So just miracle after miracle after miracle after miracle, all these things are happening, all these things are taking place, and every situation is a little bit different, though the need is consistent. So if we come to chapter 7, I want us to look now in verse number 31. In verse number 31 it says, "And again, departing from the coast of Tyre and Sidon, he came unto the Sea of Galilee through the midst of the coast of Decapolis." So we see the location. We understand where Christ is at. And then it says in verse 32, and they bring unto him one that was deaf. So someone is being brought to Christ, or someone is coming to Christ who is deaf. Now, I'm not trying to insult any of our intelligence. I'm not trying to be silly, but I want us to think about what it means to be deaf. It means you simply cannot hear. It does not mean you cannot see. It does not mean you cannot touch. It does not mean that you cannot feel. Whenever it says that the man was deaf, it means the man could not hear. Not only that, it says that he had an impediment in his speech, and that too makes sense. If you've ever visited with someone who was deaf and they're trying to communicate to you through the spoken language, you know that they almost always have a very strong impediment because they've been incapable of hearing how the words are really supposed to be spoken or formulated. Okay, so you've got this man who is deaf and he has this impediment because of his deafness. And what is he in need of? He is in need of a miracle. He is in need of a touch from God. He is in need of something that only God can do for him through Christ. So it says in verse number 32, and they beseech him, or they beg him, to put his hand upon him. Something that Christ, we've already talked about and we already know, had done in other situations. Now notice what it says in verse number 33, and he, that being Christ, took him aside from the multitude, so he got personal contact, unlike others, but notice what it says next. It says, and put his fingers into his ears. Now understand, please, I'm not going to be silly tonight. I'm not trying to do anything but trying to get us to understand what's going on here. Christ pulls this man aside out of the multitude. This is a man who is deaf, is not blind. So what does he see Christ do? The man sees Christ reaching toward him and placing his fingers into his ears. Can I ask you something? Do you want random people touching your ears? Most of us aren't comfortable with that, right? Now listen, I understand that cultures are different. I understand the times were different. But people are people, right? Okay, so if you come up to me tonight and I'm not expecting it and I'm not anticipating it and you began to touch my ear, I'm going to flinch, I'm going to jump, I'm going to turn, I'm going to wonder what in the world is going on. This better be Susie. I mean, those are some of the thoughts that are going to go through my mind quickly. And yet here is this man and he is looking at Christ and Christ extends his hands. The man doesn't know exactly what's going to happen, but all of a sudden Christ now has fingers in both of his ears. All right, this is weird. This is different. But then it says this, not only did he put his fingers in his ears, it says, and he spit. Now, how many of us, when we think of Christ, we think of him being a spitter? We just don't think of Christ in that light. He's the Son of God. He's holy. He's perfect. He's all these things. I don't know about you, but in my mind, I have a hard time envisioning him just spitting. I don't know why I struggle with that, but it's not how I envision Christ. But notice what it says next. It says, he spit and touched his tongue. Do you have the visual here? Christ spits on his hands after he's touched the man's ears and then takes the spit on his hand and touches the man's tongue. Now again, I just want us to be honest about this. Does that sound nasty to you? I'm just going to be very transparent for just a moment. Some of you have probably seen this over the years, but there have been times that kids have been coming through the church and I've watched them walk through the sanctuary and they've got their hands all in their mouth. And they just got their hand here and their hand here and their hand here, and then they walk by me and they stick their hand up like they want to shake my hand. You know what I have done every time I have seen that? I've said, no thanks, buddy, and I pat him on the head. Why? Because it's gross. I'm just trying to get us to see this. If I walked up to you and I put my fingers in your ears, you would say, what are you doing? And if I said, oh, just a minute, I've only got one more thing I want to do, and now let me touch your tongue, do you see what might could be met with resistance? But that's exactly what happened. Now notice in verse number 34 what it says. It says, "And looking up to heaven, he sighed and saith unto him, Ephratha, that is, be opened. And straightway his ears were opened, and the string of his tongue was loosed, and he spake plain." So what happened? Well, what happened is the man got exactly what he needed from God. That's what happened. The man was deaf and he needed to be able to hear. The man had an impediment and he needed to be able to speak clearly. And that is exactly what he got from God. He got the healing he needed, but it came in a completely strange and unusual and a lack of consistent fashion. There was no uniformity to the approach of Christ. But that is exactly what happened. He got what he needed, though it may not have been what he would have chosen. Can you imagine the man sitting there for just a moment saying something like this? Couldn't you just give the verbal command? I mean, it's what you did with the demon-possessed guy, right? You just gave the verbal command and the demon went. I mean, if you can control the demons with just the verbal command, then surely you could have given my hearing back to me. You know, you touched the leper and you cleansed his body. Couldn't you have just touched me and just like touched me on the shoulder and said, be healed and that be it? Well, of course, God could have done that. But it's not what he chose to do. And so while there was a lack of consistency in how Christ handled it, the man got what he needed. And at the end of the day, that was the greatest part of the story. Now tonight, I want us to think about something. You know this. You are aware of this. We're not going to spend a long time on this. But it does not matter who the individual is. It does not matter who the person is. Every person who walks on this earth finds themselves in need at times. I know I've said this. I know I have labored this. I don't care how perfect we think someone else's life is. It's not perfect. You look around tonight and you see others and you think, man, they've got it good. Man, they've got it so good. Man, if I could just have their life. I promise you, while it may not be tonight, they have dealt with their own situations. They have dealt with their own circumstances, and they will continue to deal with them because every one of us have times and moments in our lives where we find ourselves in need. That is consistent. That is uniform. It doesn't change. And that being the case, here is what is true of every one of us. Again, this is consistent. It is uniform. This is something that we can bank on, that there are times when in our need, the only one who can do something for us is God. Man cannot do it. The employer cannot do it. The family member cannot do it. We're in this situation, we're in this moment where we would say something like this, if God doesn't do it, it's not going to happen. We've all been there. Now, if you pay attention, and I think most of us do, if you pay attention in the Christian life, you really get to hear some amazing testimonies, how God has worked. You hear things like this. We were facing a financial situation, didn't know how we were going to meet our obligations, didn't know how we were going to take care of this, and God came through in such an amazing fashion. I just want to give all the glory and all the honor and all the praise to God because God did this. We hear some amazing stories like that sometimes, don't we? Those are fun to listen to. Those are encouraging. Those are helpful. They are all those things. Sometimes we hear people say things like this. The health was an issue and the struggle was there. And God did something in my life. It was like one day I just woke up and the pain was gone. Or one day I was just able to do things that I wasn't able to do before. But God did something on my behalf that only He could have done. Somebody says, God has worked in this relationship in ways that I didn't think He'd ever work. I could stand up here a long time tonight going through each scenario. I don't need to. You don't need me to. But some amazing testimonies take place. So I don't know if you've ever realized this, and again, I think most of us have. We are the ones who then find ourselves in some kind of a need. And as a result of finding ourselves in some kind of a need, we come to this conclusion, all right, only God can meet this need. Can I ask you if this has ever been a part of your thought process? That you've kind of determined in your mind how God needs to meet your need? It happens many times. We're guilty of determining how God needs to meet this particular need in our lives. I mean, after all, for brother so-and-so, this is what happened to him, so this is what I think the Lord's going to do for me. And this is what the Lord did for this family, so based upon what the Lord did for that family, this is what the Lord needs to do for our family. And the Lord did this for this person in this situation, so this is what the Lord's going to do in my situation, because we want that consistency, right? We want God to work in this way because that seems to be the way that God has been working. We want God to accomplish it like this because that's how he seems to have accomplished it for someone else. And then again, I don't know if we've all noticed this, but sometimes here is what God does, metaphorically or allegorically speaking. He walks up to us in our need, in our situation, and he says, "Let me stick my fingers in your ear." And all of a sudden, we're thinking to ourselves, this isn't what I expected. This is not the route that I thought God was going to take in my life. This is completely different than anything I've witnessed, or completely different than anything I've ever seen. I did not expect God to work in this fashion. And then while God has done all these things for everyone else, not only is he doing something in our lives that we've not seen or that we haven't witnessed before, but now we're the one, it seems, as though he is spitting on his hand and sticking it on our tongue. Not only is it different, we don't like it. Have we ever been there? God, I need you to work. God, I need you to do something. God, only you and you alone can fix this. God, I need you to work. And I know what you did for brother so-and-so, and I know what you did for their family. And God, I know how you worked there. And God, I just need you to work. And then all of a sudden it's like, God, what are you doing? I don't like this. I don't like this at all. I forget sometimes that God is God. Now, I don't forget the verbal reality of that, but I sometimes forget the practical reality of that. That God is allowed to work in my life any way he chooses. And God is allowed to work in your life any way he chooses. And it does not have to be consistent, and it does not have to be uniform. He doesn't have to do for me, and he doesn't have to do for you what he has done for everyone else. Because he is God, he has the freedom to do in my life whatever he wants, whether or not I understand it, and whether or not I like it. And I need to remember that for this reason. God is always faithful. God is always faithful. Now, why do I need that reminder? I need that reminder for this reason. Because God is faithful, he will always, always, always give me what I need. God is not going to fail in meeting my needs, whatever it is. So whether it be financial, whether it be health, whether it be relationship, whether it be some kind of conflict, whatever it is, God is going to meet my need. And at the end of the day, that is the most important thing, my need being met. And for you, the most important thing is your need being met. So when God begins to work in our lives, and we don't understand it, and it's not the traditional way, and it's not how we've seen God work in the past, kind of like this man, we need to just sit there or stand there and let God work. And when he begins to do things in our lives that are unpleasant and things that are just not at all what we want, just be patient. Because God is working his perfect will in our lives. We all know this. It's not easy to stand there and let him work when we don't like the way he's working. But again, if it produces the ultimate end of our need being met, then we've got what we need, and we can rejoice in that. I have no idea what may be going on in your lives tonight. Some of you may be sitting here this evening saying, you know, things are going pretty good, things are going fine, and I don't have a real strong need. I don't have something going on right now that I need to really bring before the Lord. Things are pretty good right now. That's good. But someone in here could be thinking to themselves, right now I've got something facing me. I need God to work here. I need God to do this. I need God to accomplish something here. And it's possible that some in here tonight, let's hear this please, some in here tonight may be saying something like this, God, I don't understand what you're doing. I don't understand. Remember, we don't have to understand because God is God. And we might be saying something like this, God, not only do I not understand, I don't like what you're doing. That's not the point of discussion either. The point is this, is do you want God to meet your need? Then let him do it however he wants, because when he does it, you'll know God did it, and you'll be able to give him the praise for it. We need to remember, God can do it however he wants. It's not up to us. All we need is for him to do it. And if he does, then we're good.
If you've appreciated this message from Kyle Olsfelt of Grace Baptist Church, let us know by contacting us on our website at gbcpampa.com or on our Facebook page, Grace Baptist Church, Pampa, Texas.